Good evening and welcome to Sports Takeover. This is Matt and Chris on RMU Radio. Thank you for tuning in. Let's get started. College football is officially in full swing. Week one is in the books. We have some reactions from week one, Chris. What do you got for us?
Well, I wish we could have some more exciting reactions. It's mostly just individual performances, as essentially every team that was supposed to win won. There were 25 ranked teams going into the week, obviously. Only one of them lost, and that was because it was a matchup between Oregon and Auburn, two ranked teams already. Auburn managed to actually come back in a thriller against Oregon. They were down going into the fourth quarter, 21-13, managed to storm back and win 27-21. And them two basically just flip-flop positions in the top 25. Nobody fell out, but Boise State managed to make themselves up to 24th because we have two teams tied at 25th, Iowa State, and for whatever reason, Nebraska still remains in there, despite only beating South Alabama 35-21. I just had to throw that little jab in there at the Cornhuskers again because, man, it just still bothers me a lot.
Yeah, it's weird, but you're right. There is not a lot of movement in the top 25, nor should there have been much movement in the top 25. There were some surprises, I thought, outside the top 25.
Absolutely.
Boise State beating Florida State 36-31. Florida State, a team that was competing for national championships in the not-too-distant past.
Yeah, about 5 years ago.
But they are completely irrelevant at this point. Missouri lost 31-37 to Wyoming. Missouri being a team that got votes to be in the top 25. And I don't believe probably got any in week two.
No, but they were also a team led by Kelly Bryant, the former Clemson quarterback, who transferred, obviously, with the emergence of Trevor Lawrence. But regardless, this is Kelly Bryant's new team, and lose to a team from the Mountain West that has probably about 50,000 people in their whole state is not really good news for them, at least.
No, and USC quarterback JT Daniels is now out for the season, blew out his knee. Not that USC was a championship contender, but it was a team that some had, you know, certain expectations for, at least to be competitive in their conference. I don't see that being the case anymore with their starting quarterback going down.
No, I mean, USC, in my opinion, was just a team that would get 7 wins, people would throw them into the top 25 polls for no apparent reason whatsoever just because they have the name. But without JT Daniels, who actually was a quarterback's name I knew going into the season, there's no way USC is going to be able to compete in the Pac-12 this year. So big loss for them for sure.
Couple other takeaways. Penn State and Maryland both put up 79 points. Not that they played anybody, but 79 points each, and they allowed a total of 7 points.
Yeah, the Penn State game.
Maryland wasn't even good last year.
Maryland won't be good either. It's
no.
Just, I don't know. I guess they
79
they,
points. They won't score
somehow
that many the rest of the season.
I think they'll score at least that many in the ring 11. But
79 points was a lot for both of those teams. Jalen Hurts, very impressive for Oklahoma. 332 passing yards, 176 rushing yards, and 6 total touchdowns to his, I believe, 3 incompletions.
Yeah, he was 20-23, and this was his first game with Oklahoma. It's a new team. It's not exactly like he's been there working his way up. He just kind of came in flying by the seat of his pants and doing very well against a Houston team, which, albeit they're not as good as Oklahoma, clearly Oklahoma is, was, and will be the stronger team, but Houston is not terrible.
No,
by
not
any
at
means.
All.
So
not
for him
all
to throw and run for 6 combined touchdowns, really impressive for sure.
It's very early, but it makes me feel good about putting Oklahoma in my college football playoff prediction.
Me too, honestly. I mean, it's quarterback university now. It's no other way to say it. Another good takeaway is University of Tennessee. I actually brought them up last week. They are the only team I thought that UAB might lose to. I guess I will have to flip the script on that because they paid Georgia Southern $950,000 to lose 38-30 at home. They paid them almost $1 million so they could get an easy win on their schedule, and they just nothing, lost, terrible. What are you doing, Tennessee? You're in the SEC, and this is the showcase you have for the first week? Man, that's something.
That hurts. You're going to have to bring in FCS schools if you're going to pay them that kind of money because it hurts. That hurts. That's a lot of money to give up to not even win the football game.
But bringing in FCS schools doesn't always work out as well. West Virginia played James Madison, and James Madison is a very strong FCS school. They're consistently top 10 as far as FCS goes, but West Virginia only won 20-13. It was as competitive as a game as any West Virginia will play. They're not going to be a good team this year.
Yeah, they're not the same West Virginia team that's been ranked the last few years.
But still, only win by 7 against an FCS team, not great. And speaking of, Iowa State played Northern Iowa to triple overtime and barely won 29-26. Iowa State is a team that was ranked in the top 25 in the preseason, still ranked there for whatever reason. Once again, them and Nebraska both hold the 25th spot, but they got it very close.
I think we can both agree that there's going to be some movement in the bottom portion of that top 25.
100%.
I mean, we loved how much that moved around last year, but when you've got four win in 2018 Nebraska, triple overtime Iowa State, Boise State, you know, who knows? But, I mean, there's some teams down there that we could have some fun with, I think, at some point in the season. But for now, not a lot of movement anywhere in the top 25.
No, maybe next week we'll show some more. One more really fun game I found looking through all the scores. San Diego State, they played Weber State, Weber State's FCS. San Diego State won 6-0. It was a barn burner.
Oh.
Just interesting. That's all I found it to be. Interesting, that's all.
Not a very entertaining game.
No, so college football, it was week one, but it wasn't as exciting as week one as we would have hoped. Hopefully week two shapes up to be more exciting than this first week was.
For the meantime, though, we will move on to the big boys, the NFL. They kick off their season tomorrow as Green Bay travels to Chicago to take on the Bears. We're going to cover everything NFL-wise. Let's start with some stuff that's already been going on, some headlines. Chris, go ahead.
There are plenty of extensions, trades, you name it. There were just players moving around everywhere. Of course, all the practice squad signings. But there are actually big names making extensions. We're going to start with the Colts. They had Andrew Luck announce his retirement last week, so Jacoby Brissett was obviously the next guy up. He signed a two-year, $30 million deal with $20 million guaranteed. So whether he does it this year or not, it's not that big a deal. But he has two seasons to prove himself. And if for whatever reason he can't do it in those two seasons, Brian Hoyer signed a three-year, $12 million deal to be the backup there. So at least Indianapolis has some stability at quarterback. Not as good as Andrew Luck, but it's something at least. A lot of offensive linemen getting deals. Cody Whitehair, he's a guard for the Bears I never had heard of, but at 5 years, $52.5 million, clearly he's somebody everybody else in the league has heard of, so well-deserved payday for him. Mike Pouncey, center for the Chargers, 1 year, $9 million. He's big anchor for hopefully Melvin Gordon, but we'll see who's back there. Lyle Collins, he's a right tackle for the Dallas Cowboys, 5 years, $50 million. I saw a clip of him earlier of him just pancaking two to three different guys on the same play, so with Ezekiel Elliott getting the big deal that he got, Collins, of course, is one of the main guys on that line. And speaking of Zeke, he was going to hold out this year. I did not draft him on my fantasy football team because last year I drafted Le'Veon Bell, who did hold out. Instead, Ezekiel Elliott will play week one because he now has a six-year, $90 million deal, $50 million guaranteed. He is the highest paid running back in the National Football League now. That has to be the biggest deal, I think, up to this point, right?
Yeah. Real quick on the Colts, I like those moves. I think you're paying those two guys combined less than you're paying Andrew Luck. You had the money, you might as well use it. Put some, you know, let Jacoby Brissett know that you believe in him, put some stock in him. And then Hoyer's a good backup option. So those are good moves. Back to Ezekiel Elliott. On my notes here, I have the word close in quotation marks because everything I kept reading said, oh yeah, he's close to a deal. And I was like, yeah, right. He's not close to a deal. Apparently he was close to a deal because he finally got one done. I didn't think this was money that was going to come his way.
No, I didn't either.
With the offensive line that the Dallas Cowboys have, you can afford to put Alfred Morris or someone else who would be a backup on, you know, another team. You can put that kind of player behind that line and they'll be effective. Dak Prescott's a decent quarterback. He can be effective. Amari Cooper is effective. They have players on that offense that they would have been okay without Elliott. Now, to be clear, Elliott's probably a top three running back in the NFL.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, deserves what he got, and good for him, and it makes the Dallas Cowboys a better football team, but I did not think that was coming.
Well, maybe this is Jerry Jones saying, okay, we've competed for, you know, so many years, not as high as the Dallas Cowboys should have, but when you sign Elliott, this is a player that will push your team over the edge. You know, if he had 150 yards in a playoff game, it's not exactly common to see that much rushing done in the playoffs. You know, people play a little more conservatively or whatever. If Elliott's a guy that can do that, I think, against any team probably, especially with that line there. So while I didn't think it was going to come, he definitely deserves it. And it's a smart move if the Cowboys want to win now, which clearly they look like they do.
Yeah, and with Dak Prescott asking for $40 million a year, I didn't think Zeke was going to get this, but I definitely don't think Dak is going to get that.
He's not.
Assuming that he won't budge and the Cowboys don't want to go to that number for him, maybe they're looking for a new quarterback, which makes this even smarter. You're not trying to rebuild your entire offense. You're just looking for one piece of it. So obviously that's farther down the road. We aren't concerned with that yet. They aren't concerned with that yet. But Ezekiel Elliott got his money. I didn't think he would.
Yeah, especially it being 6 years, too. We've seen Le'Veon Bell and Todd Gurley not get deals that long. Todd Gurley's is 4 years. What's Bell's? Three?
I think.
Yeah, Bell's
three
is like
or four. Three or four.
Either way. Neither of them have six. Six is a long time to lock up one guy. And Elliott certainly will be good enough in a league where running backs seem to have a 4 to 5 year lifespan before they manifest themselves on another team. If Elliott can produce for all 6 of these years, it'll look like a genius move because he'll probably be worth $20 million if he keeps up the level he's at this time. But good for them. A bigger move than Elliott actually came with the Rams, and it wasn't Todd Gurley, but it was quarterback Jared Goff. He signed a 4-year, $134 million. No, I did not say the wrong number. That is how much the Rams are giving him. $110 million is guaranteed. That's money I'll never see in my entire life. And Jared Goff just woke up one morning and suddenly it's all guaranteed to him. That's a lot of faith that the Rams are putting in Jared Goff.
And it's a lot of money to put in one player, no matter who it is.
So much.
He's a good quarterback, and he led them to a Super Bowl last year, and I understand that. I mean, we'll see how things play out for them, but there's a lot of talent on that team. And when you have that much talent, that's a lot of money that you have to dish out to keep that talent on your team, and that's a lot of it now that's going to him. One that comes to mind is Joe Flacco. Not that he's as good. Yeah, but he wins a Super Bowl with the Ravens, and they gave him all kinds of money. And what did the Ravens have to do after that? Blow up the roster twice. And now he's gone. It's one of those things where it's a lot of money and it's good to keep him now, but there's going to come a point where, you're going to have to sacrifice something. Something's going to have to give because of how much money you put in one guy. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
And Jared Goff's a good quarterback, top 10. I don't know that he's top 5 currently as it stands. He's $31 million. It's a lot of money each year to be given a guy who I don't consider to be top 5 quarterback. Obviously, the Rams do. Sean McVay does. He's good. He was the number one overall pick. I mean, these are the kind of things that we should expect number one overall picks to get. But like you said, they're going to have so much difficulty. They have Brandon Cooks, Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, all at receiver, all very good receivers that could get very good paydays from other teams who are willing to give more when the Rams don't have as much money. Aaron Donald, I don't know when his contract is up, but I'm sure when it is, he will become the highest paid defensive lineman in history, I'd have to imagine, over Khalil Mack. So it's going to be hard for the Rams to find money with this kind of money tied up with Goff. But once again, much like the Cowboys, that's a problem for the future. If they can win right now, that's not as big an issue. Another one I want to point out, Miles Jack, linebacker for the Jaguars, 4 years, $57 million. It's a lot for a guy who was a second-round pick because of injury problems, who has played 98% of all the snaps that he potentially could play and hasn't missed a game. He has just been lights out for them. Good for the Jaguars, who have a good defense and doesn't really help them overall, but smart to get him tied up at least.
Yep. A couple other moves. LeSean McCoy is now with the Kansas City Chiefs.
Reunited with Andy Reid.
Yeah, we'll see what he's able to do there. The Texans made a whole bunch of moves. Clowney is in Seattle. Kenny Stills, Laremy Tunsil are now Texans. Kiko Alonso also going from the Dolphins to the Saints. There were all kinds of moves happening there. Of course, we have moves that still aren't happening. Melvin Gordon is still very much a Charger and still very much not interested in playing for the Chargers. Trent Williams, offensive lineman for the Washington Redskins. Pretty important piece to that team, I would say, given
one of the only three on offense, I think.
Yeah, so he's expressed his desire to not play there. He is still there and not reporting. So those are a couple interesting ones that will they get moved? Will they sit? Will they come back? We still don't know. So we'll see what happens with those.
Yeah, as far as the Texans go, they were acting like it was the trade deadline in the NHL with all the moves they made. They also got Carlos Hyde from the Chiefs.
Yep.
That helps replace Lamar Miller, who was out for the season. But they got rid of Clowney, who I guess Clowney was going to sit out or something like that.
Didn't want to sign his tender,
yeah,
I believe.
Yeah, contract problems with him, yeah. Le'Veon Bell situation. So they shipped him off to Seattle, and they got Parkevious Mingo, Jake Martin. They're both linebackers. He's played, but, it's not Jadeveon Clowney for sure. But then they turned around and said, well, if our defense isn't going to be good, I guess our offense has to be. Laremy Tunsil is considered by many to be one of the best young tackles in the league, and the Dolphins gave him up for chump change. Kenny Stills is a receiver who has had many ups and downs, but when you have Deshaun Watson slinging the ball, you have DeAndre Hopkins, Will Fuller, maybe that's the kind of breakout that Kenny Stills needs. Miami, though, they got rid of Kiko Alonso, starter. Laremy Tunsil, Kenny Stills, three starters gone, and they have now a first-round pick this year, next year a second-round pick next year, a left tackle and a cornerback who are underwhelming to show for it. They lost Ryan Tannehill. They traded him to Tennessee a while back. They have Ryan Fitzpatrick named their opening day starter. It's just, there's a lot going on in Miami that's not good for them right now.
I mean, I think they're going about it the right way, to be honest with you. I mean, it's a team that's not going anywhere this year. but they're putting themselves or attempting to put themselves in a position to succeed in the not too distant future. I mean, they have a lot of draft picks,
As far as NFL is concerned.
Yeah, and if you do that, if you use those picks the right way, all of a sudden you've got a lot to be excited about next year. And Ryan Fitzpatrick, to me, is the right option at quarterback, because if you let if Josh Rosen is a guy that you think is a long-term solution, you let him sit behind Fitzpatrick. Basically the exact opposite of what the Cardinals did with him last year. Maybe he's not the long-term solution, but there's no reason, given Miami's situation right now, to throw a young quarterback that may or may not be in your long-term plans into the onto the field right now when you know there's not going to be a lot of success. Ryan Fitzpatrick's a good fit to be their starter right now. They're looking towards next year, and I think I don't love the Alonzo trade, but other than that, they did a decent job getting picks and getting pieces that can help them next year.
It's funny, they seem to be putting themselves consistently in position of who is our quarterback. I saw in 2008 they had, I believe, the number one pick that year. They took offensive tackle Jake Long, great offensive tackle. The number two pick that year was Matt Ryan, who obviously he has solved any problem that Atlanta had at quarterback following Mike Vick's departure. He is still their quarterback 10 years later. Meanwhile, the Dolphins have, you know, gone between so many various ones. Tannehill was thought to be the solution, but whether it be injuries or inefficiency or whatever the situation was, he's not working out for them in the long run. Josh Rosen was a guy that Cardinals wasted a top 10 pick on last year and is now in Miami. So I never thought Josh Rosen was very good in the first place. I thought that was a strong reach last year the Cardinals took on him. So could he resurrect himself in Miami? Sure. It's only his second year. There's plenty of room to grow. But right now, I think you are very right that Fitzpatrick is the smarter move. It's a veteran that Rosen can at least learn behind. And if anything else, get some understanding more of how the Dolphins work than the idiotic situation that he was thrown into in Arizona. Oh, Sam Bradford's our starter. Oh, no, let's put Josh Rosen in. Well, we don't have a good offense. Well, we'll see what Josh Rosen can do anyway. It was just a bunch of people not knowing what they're doing, clearly why Arizona got rid of their head coach. But Miami is a team looking down now, but hopefully looking forward to the future in a few years.
Rebuilds are all about how you set it up and how you execute it. The Dolphins have set it up well. If they can execute it well, they should be out of it fairly quickly. A lot of teams don't have that. It's going to be a bad year for Miami, but it may be a quick turnaround. Time will tell.
But one thing time will tell is who will be doing extremely well this year. And time right now telling it is going to be myself and Matt. We have all 8 division winners lined up for you. We'll see if we'll get them right, but my guess is no. But either way, we're going to give them to you anyway. Starting in the AFC, we're going to go to the East. We know it's not going to be the Dolphins winning it. It's going to be the Patriots. Their division has just consistently been terrible for the last 20 years, essentially. There was a few good years with Sanchez. Dolphins made playoffs here and there. Bills made 1 year, but year in, year out, it's Tom Brady getting at least 11 wins and the Patriots cruising to a first-round bye, and I don't see why this year will be any different.
I think the Bills and the Jets will at least be relevant for the majority of the year, somewhere hovering around 500. I have the Bills at 7-9 and the Jets at 8-8. So somewhat relevant. I have the Patriots, though, at 11-5, winning that division. I don't think the Patriots are overly strong, but every time they lose, they add. And getting guys like Demaryius Thomas at receiver, Josh Gordon at receiver, Jamie Collins comes back at linebacker, who they shipped to Cleveland a number of years ago. So every time that you think, oh, man, they took a hit, they find a way to bring somebody back, and it'll be enough, I think, to keep them relevant in the AFC, in the AFC East.
Moving to the AFC North, a lot of people were high on the Cleveland Browns. They made a lot of moves. Last year it was the Ravens who won the division. I'm going to go with the Steelers, actually. They seem to not really have that much of an altered team from this season to last season. Antonio Brown's departure, obviously, it's a big loss. He is a huge offensive impact. But beyond him, there really weren't many other starters that were lost. I don't think anybody was lost. I think at inside linebacker, we finally found the replacement for Shazier. We both drafted Devin Bush in the first round and signed Mark Barron. So them two, along with Vince Williams, will rotate very nicely on the inside. And I believe every other position on the team is as it was last year. And there was a lot of stupid close games last year that we should have won any against the AFC West. Honestly, we should have been able to take, and we lost all 4 of them. So I think if they can eliminate that kind of issue this year, there's no reason they can't win the North.
Yeah, I have the Steelers and the Browns finishing with the same record, both at 10-6. I think these are both teams that are very capable of being a letdown and also very capable of winning a division and competing in the AFC. With the Steelers, the distractions are gone. People talk about Bell and Brown being gone. Bell isn't a subtraction this year. He wasn't there last year, so that's irrelevant. Brown going, my thing is I'm anxious to see how Juju plays without having Brown on the other side. I think Juju's a very capable receiver, but to this point in his career, he's had one of the best opposite him getting double teamed, opening him up. Not saying Juju won't have a good year, but I think he has something to prove, and that'll go a long way in determining what the Steelers do. Defensively, they seem to be coming along. We'll see what it turns out to be. For Cleveland, it's a very talented team. It's just a matter of whether or not that talent translates. And the Cleveland Browns have had a way, always find a way, to take positivity and quickly turn it into negativity, because that's just the way that the Browns have been since they returned to Cleveland. I don't think that'll be the case this year. They won 7 games last year, and they've only gotten better on paper since.
They very well could have won 9 or 10 last year. They had a couple close ones, tied us. They lost to Baltimore in the last week of the season by less than 1 score. I mean, those 2 games go a different way. That's the playoff team right there.
Yeah. So I have both of those teams at 10-6. I'm going to give the edge to the Browns, simply because in the spring, one of my bold predictions was that they would win the North, so I'm going to stick with that.
Sure, that makes sense for you to stick
with
it.
And I'm
going to
say that they win the North in a very close battle.
I think we're both convinced that the Ravens are done.
I have the Ravens at 8-8. I don't think they'll be bad, but at the end of the day, I don't think they're going to be a playoff
team. They
sold
half their defense. And
yes, they did.
While Cleveland has a lot of talent, like you said, those pieces need to fit together still. Jarvis Landry, Nick Chubb, Baker Mayfield, Odell Beckham. Very good, very young. How they all work together, though, is something that we're going to have to see this season. That's where I think a few of those 6 losses you mentioned might come into it. I think they have the potential to be good, but I can't make that decision right now. There's a lot to be seen still.
They certainly have a lot to prove.
Sure. Moving into the AFC South, I have the Texans once again running away with that division. Colts, I might have actually probably put up here had they not lost Andrew Luck for the whole year. I'm not as convinced on Brissett. Tennessee, there. 7-9, 8-8, 9-7 seemed like year in and year out. I think they'll finish somewhere around there again. They seem to lack everything on offense that the Browns have. They have Derrick Henry at running back, who had a strong year last year. Marcus Mariota and Ryan Tannehill, who are combined, get injured pretty much more than any other quarterbacks in the league. And their defense is strong, but they don't have as many playmakers, I think, as especially the Texans have to compete with the Houston in the division.
I have this division as being very close. I have 6-10, 7-9, 8-8, 9-7.
Very nice.
So I think it's going to be very close. Tennessee is the team I have in there at 7-9. I really wanted to give them more wins, but looking at their schedule, I just have a hard time finding wins for them in this schedule. Like, I think they're a better football team than 7-9, but it's hard to find those wins. Houston, I have at 9-7. It's a tougher schedule because they won the division last year. The Colts, I had at 10-6 before the Luck retirement, so I'm like you, I would have had them here otherwise. But yeah, I have the Texans at 9-7 winning the South.
Yeah, the Jags, I don't know what that 1 year fluke was. They made the championship game. It's anything they had that season is gone. Moving into the AFC West, I am not going to go with the Chiefs. I'm going to go with the team I thought would win it last year, and that is the Los Angeles Chargers. Their defense is extremely good. There's a lot of good pieces on there, a lot of young pieces on there. Derwin James is a great player in the secondary. On offense, if Melvin Gordon plays, he will propel this team to the AFC West. If he doesn't play, it's going to be hard. Phillip Rivers is still Phillip Rivers. There's nothing wrong with him. He will be good. I think the Chiefs have a more difficult of a schedule this year than the Chargers. I think that because, you know, they won their division.
Sure.
Some other teams are a little bit better. It's going to be hard for them to repeat. I think it's going to be very close between them two once again, but I just have the edge to the Chargers here.
Like in the North, I have the West being a 10-6 tie between both the Chiefs and the Chargers. I had the Chargers winning by 2 games or so, but then they lost safety Derwin James. Melvin Gordon is not reporting. They lost starting offensive lineman Russell Okung for the season. And I don't like that. That makes me nervous. Those are big impact players for that team in a division that's very competitive against a Kansas City team that'll be very competitive. I could see it going either way, and I like the Chargers more than I like the Chiefs, but in the tiebreaker, I have the Chiefs winning the division at 10-6.
We also need Patrick Mahomes to throw 50 touchdowns again this season. He had an excellent year last year. I don't know if that's going to happen again. I think teams can game plan for him better. Obviously, he's a very strong quarterback, but it's very hard to repeat a season like that when you're not Manning, Brady, or Breeze. So if Mahomes can do that, I think the Chiefs have every opportunity to, but I'm just not convinced that they will. Moving into the NFC, we're going to start in the East. I have Dallas once again winning that division. They signed pretty much everybody that was contracts going up. They trade last year for Amari Cooper was excellent. He is a strong piece on their offense. They're good on offense. They're good on defense. They're very good at home. I don't like Jason Garrett. I really don't like Jason Garrett a lot, but I think the players they have are good enough to get them the division. The Eagles will be close. I don't know. Carson Wentz has been up and down a lot more recently than I think him and the Eagles probably would like, and for me to pick them as the winner of the division, he just needs to be more consistent, hopefully not get injured this year. They have every chance to compete, but I just have Dallas with a slight edge right here.
I have the Eagles by a lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I have Dallas at 8-8.
8-8?
Yeah, I just don't trust them. I don't trust the Dallas Cowboys. I have the Eagles, who I trust very much, at 13-3.
13-3? You have them returning to form.
Yes, I do. They were weird last year. 9-7, they got into the playoffs. They won a playoff game. But they were weird in the early going. And I think that they'll have some more luck this year. I think they'll find a groove earlier. And I think that they're a complete football team, as we saw 2 years ago in the Super Bowl. And for that reason, I think that the Eagles will take the NFC East.
Moving into the North, I have the Bears once again rolling the North. The Vikings probably should have contended last year. Kirk Cousins, I don't know. He got a lot of money. He basically started off the whole quarterback bandwagon of getting paid more than $90 million. And he is probably the least prolific of them at this point. Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen are excellent receivers. Dalvin Cook is a very good running back. But I don't know. Something about them just seems to not be clicking as much. And whereas on the Bears side, I think they have a lot clicking. Their defense is just, it's ferocious. They did lose a few players. They lost, I believe, Amos, the safety, went to the Packers. That was big for the Packers. I think the Packers are going to be better this year than last year. They'll be better than the Vikings. They'll give the Bears a run for their money, but my money's still on the Bears for this one.
I think I like the NFC North more than most people do. I have three teams at 9-7 and my winner at 11-5.
You have the Lions at 9-7.
I have the Lions at 9-7. I like the Lions. They were a top 10 defense last year.
Well, Matt Patricia's good on defense.
Yes, and they've added pieces defensively, Trey Flowers being one of them. I think their defense can be a top five unit. I think they'll be really good. Offensively, they have weapons too.
Allegedly.
Matt Stafford's solid. Kerryon Johnson will be healthy at running back. And they have C.J. Anderson behind him. They've got Kenny Golladay, Marvin Jones, Danny Amendola at receivers, all of which I think are very solid options. And they now have two tight ends that I think can get the job done. Jesse James, who I feel was utilized incorrectly in Pittsburgh. If he's utilized differently in Detroit, I feel like he can be very effective. And Hawkinson, who they drafted in the first round, tight end out of Iowa. If he comes along, I think that offense could be better than most people think, making this team better than most people think.
But the same problem I have with them is what you had with the Browns. They're the Lions. They just seem to always find a way to screw themselves up somehow. Even the few seasons where they were able to make the playoffs, they just couldn't get it done. I don't know. I hope they do well, but I don't have as much faith in them as you do. Who do you pick for the division?
The Minnesota Vikings.
You got the Vikings
at 11-5. They were my pick to win the Super Bowl last year.
So you feel high on them still?
Yeah, I don't know if I'll go quite that far because they kind of let me down last year going 8-7-1. But I still think they're a really good team on both sides of the ball. I mean, you listed the weapons that they have offensively. Defensively, Mike Zimmer's a fantastic defensive coach, and they've got a lot of pieces there as well. So I like the Minnesota Vikings.
All right, moving into the NFC South, it has been Drew Brees' division basically for the last 10 years, but there's been a few years where Matt Ryan has taken his team and led it to victory, and I think this will be one of those years. Atlanta was a team last year that was, I believe, disappointing for a lot of people. There are a lot of people on their defense last season that were injured. I believe Vic Beasley missed a few games. Deion Jones missed a lot. So did Keanu Neal. Those are three starters, at least, on their defense were on the IR. That's the reason why they did not do as well last year, but they still got 7 wins. Having those people, they also drafted 2 offensive linemen in the first round this season, which will help their offense tremendously. Matt Ryan is not getting any younger, so the more protection he gets, the better for him. Julio Jones is looking to get an extension done this week that will make him probably the highest paid receiver in the league. I still like Mohamed Sanu. I saw a fun video the other day, not really relevant to their division, but he can throw a football 56 miles an hour.
He's got a cannon.
Which is top 5 in the entire National Football League, so that's impressive and just got me paying attention more to the Falcons, but I got them slightly over the Saints in this one.
I have the Saints. I have them coming in at 12-4. I like them a lot. They were one of the best teams in football last year. I don't think that they've lost a lot of pieces. Mark Ingram's gone, but I mean, Alvin Kamara can certainly handle the workload at running back, and they added Latavius Murray if they want to give somebody else some carries, so they're fine. Michael Thomas is a fantastic receiver.
Phenomenal.
Drew Brees, of course, at quarterback, has won a Super Bowl. He knows what he's doing there. Defensively, maybe they're not as strong as some teams, but they've certainly come a long way in recent years. I like the Saints to be one of the better teams in the NFL this year.
They're They're good. They're always good. But they've only had one Super Bowl, and they probably should have had more in the last 10 years. I can see them as a wild card team. It's just, it'll be tough. I like the Falcons a lot. And last but not least, the NFC West. I don't really think there's many people who would pick against them. It's the Los Angeles Rams. They're excellent. They are as good a team as any in the National Football League. You put them against any of the other 31 teams, I don't think, without a doubt, that they would lose handily to any of them. Jared Goff got that big extension. He's great. I listed all the offensive players before. Defense is just as good. Aaron Donald is the top defensive player in the league. This is a team that is poised to win 13, 14 games this season. Seattle, they had a good season last year, but they can't compete on the same level that the Rams can, so I have Los Angeles.
I have the Rams as well at 11 wins. My biggest question mark with them is obviously Todd Gurley was not utilized in the postseason the way that he had been for his entire career up to that point.
He's been dealing with injuries.
Yes, and I believe he still isn't. I mean, I think he's good to go, but I think there's something going on with his knees, arthritis or something along those lines. And I guess my question is, if he is not utilized as a workhorse running back like he has been at times, and that offense becomes more one-dimensional, what do we see from that offense? Because that offense is dynamic.
Extremely.
But if at running back they're not as strong as they've been and they don't have C.J. Anderson to fall back on like they did last year in the playoffs, who played very well in the playoffs, I just wonder if that offense will be as good if it's forced into the passing game more often. Not that I don't think they're capable, but I think anytime you become more one-dimensional, things become more difficult.
But the one good thing they have going for them over most every other team, Sean McVay,
You're right.
He knows how to coach. He does it very well, differently than most other teams, a team that maybe only has 10 wins, his coaching can get them those extra 2-3 wins. Either way, those are our 8 division winners. I also want to add in 2 teams who I think will have the biggest rise and the biggest fall from last season. Funny enough, I chose 2 teams who were both 7-9 last year, just coincidentally. The biggest riser I have is the Falcons. I had them at 7-9 last season. This year, I have them up to 11-5.
Wow.
It's a 4-game jump. And also a 4-game jump, I had the Dolphins last year at 7-9. And this season, I think they are going to be 3-13. There's just not a lot going on right there. So those are who I think will be the biggest rise and fall there.
I don't have that specifically, but I have the Dolphins at 2 wins. So
I was convinced 2 at least, but maybe a 3rd
would
be nice.
I mean, just not necessarily falling from last year, but I have the Dolphins at the bottom with 2. I have a handful of teams with 3. A team like the Bengals I don't think is going to be very good. I don't see a whole lot going for the Giants either.
Nothing.
The Cardinals, I think, are still a mess. So teams like that, I think, will very much be at the bottom. I have the Eagles at the very top at 13-3, which is a 4-game improvement over their record last year. Let's see. Just some other teams. I have, Detroit, like I talked about. I have the Denver Broncos at 9-7.
They're a good team. I like them.
I think Vic Fangio is the head coach now, who was the defensive coordinator in Chicago last year. And, of course, we saw what that defense did. Denver's defense has been good in recent years, dropped off a little bit, but I think he can give it the boost they need. And not that Joe Flacco is my favorite quarterback, but I think he can be better there than the inconsistencies they've had since Peyton Manning retired.
He's capable enough.
Sure. So I think you could see a few extra wins out of Denver this year.
Yeah, that's a good point you make there. Denver is a team that they're in a tough division. The Chargers and Chiefs are very good. It's just going to be harder for them to move ahead. And speaking of the AFC West, I have a representative from them in my Super Bowl prediction. I have the Super Bowl being the Rams over the Chargers.
Battle of LA.
Yeah, right before I walked in, you said, you got your Super Bowl teams picked. I said, crap, no, I didn't. So in 15 seconds, I whipped up the Chargers and Rams. I like them a lot. Would have probably picked them last year as well. But I think the Rams remind me a lot of the Seahawks, just reverse. Seahawks made the Super Bowl 2 years in a row, blew out the Broncos the first year, and then lost the second year. I think the Rams were a team that got there last year, but just didn't have enough stuff. I think this year they have enough stuff to win it.
Okay. I can get behind that. I still have the same issue with the Chargers. The injuries make me nervous. I think that they're a very good team, but they have not proven at any point during Phillip Rivers' tenure that they can get over the hump and get to the Super Bowl. And although this looked like it could be their best chance, the injuries that they have to key players and the holdout by Melvin Gordon makes me a little bit nervous. There's a possibility there because I don't think the AFC is overly strong. And unfortunately for that reason, the Patriots are my representative from the AFC.
Ooh.
I didn't want them there, Chris, but I have so many teams in there at 10-6.
It's hard to pick against them.
That
too.
At 11-5, I have them as the top seed. And when the playoffs in the AFC run through New England, that spells trouble for everybody else. Thankfully, I don't have them winning. I have them losing to the New Orleans Saints. A team that I feel like should have been there last year, is very similar to that team and is very capable of being back there this year. They just added Kiko Alonso, which is not going to do anything but make them stronger defensively. And to me, the NFC is so strong. You're absolutely right. The Rams certainly look like a team that could be there. They have all the components that they need. But in a conference that is that difficult, I think it's going to be harder to have a team get there 2 years in a row. Because I really think, you know, the Saints could get there. I think the Rams could get there.
Eagles.
The Eagles, definitely. If the Vikings actually lived up to what they have on paper with all of those weapons that they have and they can stay healthy, I think the Vikings could make a push. But they let me down last year, so I'm not going to go that route. But regardless, I mean, there's probably two teams in almost every division in the NFC that you could make a case for getting to the Super Bowl. Some obviously more so than others, but there's a bigger pool, I feel, to pick from in the NFC, and that's why I'm going to go with somebody different in the Saints.
Yeah, the AFC seems to have a few teams at the top, the Chiefs, Chargers, Patriots. I don't even want to put the Steelers, Browns, or Texans in there.
Those fall in the category right under of teams that could do it but need to show us something first.
Yeah. So we're both convinced that the NFC will have the Super Bowl champion. I have Rams and Chargers. Matt has the Saints and the Patriots. Fingers crossed it's not the Patriots, but we'll have to wait.
Want my Super Bowl prediction teams to actually make the playoffs this year because I struggled with that last year.
Yeah, hopefully for everyone's sake that we get all four of our teams in the playoffs, so this is still an entertaining topic to talk about come January. But come right now, we are going to take a break, but coming up after the break, we have some MLB action and a return to soccer, which everybody has been asking for, so please stay tuned. Don't ask me what you know is true. Don't have to tell you I love your precious heart. I was standing, you were there. Two worlds collided and they could never tear us apart. We could live for a thousand years, but if I hurt you, I make wine from your tears. I told you that we could fly.
Welcome back to the show, Sports Takeover with Matt and Chris on RMU Radio. Let's shift gears from the NFL season preview to where we are right now in Major League Baseball as it enters its final month. First of all, Justin Verlander, was fantastic over the weekend.
Phenomenal.
He had a no-hitter for the third time in his career, the second time in Toronto that he did it.
First pitcher to ever have two no-hitters in the same Red Stadium.
14 strikeouts, only one walk, and he retired 26 straight batters, I believe I have that number right, after a walk in the first inning.
Yes.
So absolutely phenomenal work by Justin Verlander, and I believe it took him 120 pitches?
120 pitches even.
Yeah.
It was phenomenal. It's cementing his Hall of Fame legacy that already was established even further. He is approaching 40, closer to 40 than 30, yet he is pitching like he is 25. He is, like I said last week, the front runner for the AL Cy Young. He's doing everything right. But the guy who's right behind him, though, it's going to be a tough competition. It's the number two starter, actually, somehow. Well, how is there a Cy Young pitcher who's the number two starter? Well, when they come from the same team, that's how. Gerrit Cole followed up Verlander's performance on Sunday by having 14 strikeouts in his game on Monday, which was only the second consecutive game that Gerrit Cole has had 14 strikeouts in. It's like he's just picking every single spot of the strike zone, or not even the strike zone. Wherever he wants to throw the ball, people are swinging and missing. It's incredible that if they're going to beat the top two in the Cy Young, it could be either of them. I think Verlander has a slight edge right now, but man.
It's just a bad time to try to hit against the Astros.
Yeah, honestly. And if you don't want to worry about them, well, Zach Greinke's the third. And it's tough. Their Astros are very strong right now. They're looking strong as they sit at the top of their division. 90-50, a solid 40 games over 500, which somehow is not the best record, actually, in Major League Baseball. The Yankees are 91-49. And the Dodgers are 91-50. So there is a strong power elite at the top of baseball. Like we said last week, the Yankees and Astros, both of them are going to look good. But as I was talking about with one of my other friends the other day, there is a strong possibility that there could be five teams that have 100 wins this season. I think the Yankees, Astros, and Dodgers very possibly will. The Twins, they're 86-52. They are 9-1 their last 10. They are just doing everything right. They actually have a better away record than home record. I don't know how that's possible, but hey, good for you, Minnesota. They could get 100. And the Atlanta Braves are at 86-54 as well. So there's possibility for there to be five teams that have 100 wins, and we'll only have one winner at the end of the season somehow from that pool, though.
That's an interesting possibility, and you're right. There's a lot of teams doing a lot of work at the top of the league. There were also a lot of series this weekend that involved one or two teams that are right in the thick of things, either for a division race or for a wild card. The Milwaukee Brewers took on the Chicago Cubs, took 2 out of 3 from them. The New York Mets took 2 out of 3 from the Phillies, and the Tampa Bay Rays swept the Cleveland Indians. So those are some big results in some very important races. In some series where only one team is really competitive, the Red Sox and the Twins both took 2 out of 3 in their series over the weekend. The Cardinals took 3 out of 4 from the Reds, and the Braves and Nationals both swept their weekend series. So some good results there for some teams that need the good results right now.
Yeah, I think the biggest series that you mentioned was the Tampa Bay and Cleveland one. Tampa Bay swept Cleveland. Both our wild card teams going into the weekend, Tampa Bay was on the outside looking in. Now, because of the weekend, they currently sit as the top wild card in the AL. They have a one-game lead over both Oakland and Cleveland. They are currently tied right now for the secondary wild card. It is incredible.
What are you doing over there?
Yeah, I got a draft going on my phone right now.
Come on.
It's a little problematic.
Get it under control.
Either way, the AL wild card is tough. Boston, you mentioned, they had a good weekend, but still, they're 5.5 games back. For how good the other three teams are playing, it's so hard for Boston to make a way in. They have 74-64 as their record, which would be good enough in the NL to be right there in the thick of things, but the AL just is a little bit stronger. Moving over to the NL, the Mets, while they had a very good weekend taking 2 out of 3, they've been struggling lately. They're 4-6 in their last 10. They are now sitting below both the Brewers and the Diamondbacks and the Phillies, which aren't, none of them are even in wild card spots right now. The Cubs and Nationals have them. I think the Nationals pretty much solidify themselves as a wild card team, but the rest of them is still up in the air.
Yeah, and like we talked about last week, there are so many teams to jump. There are only 5 games out of a wild card spot, which is very doable, but when you have to jump 3, 4, or 5 teams to get into the position that you want to be in, that 5 games becomes quite the hurdle. I think it's still too early to say that the Mets are out of it. Same thing with the Red Sox. But by this time next week, it's very possible that those are two teams that aren't realistically in the hunt anymore.
And there's big series coming up this weekend, too. I don't believe we're not picking the Mets one, but they're playing the Phillies.
Again.
And both those teams are on the outside looking in. It's just all these teams are going to be playing against each other. So, you know, like the Rays and the Cleveland series from the last weekend, you need these series. These are ones that matter whenever it gets to the end of the month. You need to show strongly in these series. But I think really most of the divisions are pretty much solidified. Minnesota pulled away from Cleveland. Going into the weekend, there was like about a one or two game, I believe last week during the show, was like one game difference. Well, Cleveland forgot how to play, and Minnesota is on their tear. There's a six-game gap between the two of them now. So while the six games is not exactly tremendous amount to overcome, it is large enough, I think, at this point in the season, if Minnesota plays how they play, that there's not really going to be any strong division races. Maybe the NL Central, though.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, the Mets won earlier today against the Nationals. So that's a very good win for the Mets. That's a team that they're trying to track down. I mean, not one that's immediately in front of them, but I mean, those are the kind of games that you have to win right now. So it's going to come down. I mean, there's a lot of stuff here that isn't statistically set in stone, but is pretty much set. And it's just those wild card races that are going to make things interesting. And series like that and series like we have this weekend are going to be the ones that really shape up the playoffs.
And speaking of playoffs, as we shift gears from MLB, we are moving into the USL, the Pittsburgh Riverhounds League, the secondary United States Soccer League. They're getting close to the end of their season, and there is a lot of playoff shuffling to be had. So we really haven't talked about the Riverhounds in quite some time. I'm sure a lot of you, like ourselves, are wondering, well, how are they doing after such a long summer? Well, right now, the Riverhounds sit in fifth place in the Eastern Conference. They're 18 teams still in the Eastern Conference, 10 make the playoffs, so they're right about the middle. They have 47 points, but they're not that far away from first place. First place is New York Red Bulls 2, who has 54. They're 1 point behind Indy. They're 2 points behind Tampa Bay for third and fourth. So there's still plenty of room for them to move up. Since June 15th, though, the Hounds have 11 wins, 2 losses, and 1 draw. So they're playing extremely good soccer at a time where they need to.
Yeah, they're 4-1 in their last 5. And you're right, June is where they really turned it on, because early in the season, there were some losses here and there. There were a lot of ties. The wins weren't really coming, though, and they have been more recently. I believe they have 9 games remaining. So, as you said, they are kind of getting towards the end. Everything is so tight, though, in the Eastern Conference. You said that the team in first has 53 points. Eighth place has 39 points with, I believe, a game or two at hand. So Pittsburgh's got some games at hand against some. Some other teams have games at hand against them. So it's kind of weird that way, too, which distorts the numbers just a little bit. But, yeah, at 47 points, they're right in the thick of things. They could realistically finish almost anywhere in the playoff picture right now because it's that close.
They will make the playoffs, though. That's established fact.
Yes, yes. And at fifth, I believe, is it 10 that make the playoffs?
Yeah, top 10.
Yeah, so at fifth, I mean, they're in a pretty good position.
Yeah, they're 16 points up on team in 10th, so that's not really any problem.
Yeah.
And you said games in hand. They have 2 less games played than the first place team, so if they win both of those games, they suddenly jump from fifth to second. There's a lot of movement to be had. Last season, we saw them return to the playoffs and have a disappointing loss to the cross-state rival Bethlehem Steel in PKs. I don't think this year that we'll have that kind of problem. Bethlehem is 12th right now, and they're bad. It's no chance for them to make the playoffs, really. They're 7 wins, 13 losses. They're not good, so they can avoid that at least. It's just, where will the Hounds end up? And some players who have been strong for them this year, not quite as spectacular as last season. Nico Brett does lead the team with 10 goals with his fifth in Eastern Conference. There's been more dishing the ball around, though, on the team. Instead of him being the sole focus of the whole team, he has a more pulled back role so other players can kind of shine some more. Kenardo Forbes ranks third in the East with 7 assists. He's done very well. And goalkeeper Kyle Morton ranks fourth with 7 clean sheets in the East. So for us to be the fifth place team, having guys in the top five and all these areas certainly does help a lot.
Here's an interesting number I found for Kenardo Forbes. Chances created, 56.
That's a good number.
The next closest on the team is Ryan James with 25.
So the team basically flows through Forbes.
Isn't that crazy? I found that stat and it blew my mind. I mean, he's a very solid player, but that's an incredible margin.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a good reason why he's third right now in assists, too. If the whole flow of play is moving through him, then of course he's going to get more assists. But yeah, if you take him out of the equation, the Hounds are not quite nearly the team that they are right now, but certainly he has been a huge factor for them.
One thing that I think is going to be very important for the River Hounds is finishing as close to the top of the standings as they can. And I mean, of course, that's important for anybody, but they are 8-0-5 at home. They have yet to lose a game in Pittsburgh. 5 ties, I mean, that's a lot of ties, but 8-0-5, that's a very impressive home record. Their road record is not quite as impressive. I believe it's 4-4-3, so I think there's a big difference between home and away for them.
Yeah, they only have 4 losses total, which is in the Eastern Conference, that's tied for the least with Indy. They both have four. In the West, which the East and West don't play until the playoffs just because it's more costly to travel across, Phoenix has two losses, which they're in a league of their own. They have 62 points. Next closest in the West has 47, but four losses is also good for second in the West. So the Hounds aren't losing. They just needed, if they could have turned some of those draws they had in the first 2 months of the season into wins, they'd very well be looking at first or second or third as opposed to third, fourth, or fifth right now. But certainly they've looked strong moving in the past few months, and moving forward, I think there's no reason to think they won't be just as strong.
Yeah, realistically, this season's still very much up in the air for the Riverhounds. There's a lot of different possibilities and a lot of different outcomes, and not a lot of time to sort it all out, but we'll get a feel for it soon enough.
Absolutely. Last but not least, to wrap up the show, we have quick picks and bold predictions as per usual. We're going to start with the quick picks. Last week wasn't it such a good week, Matt. How did we both do?
Oh, Chris, I went 2-5. You went 3-4. It was bad.
It was.
Pitt lost. Pitt did not help us. We both had Pitt pretty confidently.
Oh, yeah, we forgot about them in the college
and
football
part. And they chose to not play.
They chose to be
Virginia.
Horrible.
That was one of the many things that went wrong for us in quick picks. So let's see if we can turn it around this week, starting with the kickoff game for the NFL. It's the Packers at the Bears, and I'm going to go with the Chicago Bears. I think this is a very evenly matched game. Both these teams being division rivals, it's already evenly matched, but on paper, I think they are as well. It's in Chicago. Green Bay has got a new coach there and some new systems that they're going to have to get used to. So for that reason, I'm going to go with the Bears.
I'm going to go with the Bears as well. Packers have, like you said, new coach, just a lot of new movements there. It's the kickoff game to celebrate 100 years of the NFL. That's why it's not the Patriots on Thursday night. Thank goodness it is, you know, two original teams being the Packers and Bears. But the Bears playing in their original stadium, it's just, I think everything is lining up for them. But I believe it was at week one last year that the Aaron Rodgers comeback against the Packers, the Bears happened. So whether or not it happens this year, I don't know, but I have the Bears winning as well. Moving to that Sunday game that I mentioned, the Patriots will be looking to raise all the banners again. They have to move everything out of the way because, of course, they need to add another one. And they will face the Pittsburgh Steelers, who actually were able to defeat them last season. But the one thing New England has going for them is this is at Foxborough. Last season, they won 8-0 in the regular season. They obviously didn't lose in the postseason either. So seeing how they won their last 10 games, when it means something at Foxborough, I don't think they're going to lose to the Steelers, especially week one. We have not won in Foxborough with Ben Roethlisberger. I just can't see it happening this week. I have the Patriots.
I think these are two teams that are relatively evenly matched. But yes, in New England, that doesn't bode well for the Steelers. It hasn't in the past. I don't think it will on banner night. Like I said, it's an even matchup, but in New England, I got to go with the Patriots.
And there's always wacky radio stuff or fire alarms or whatnot whenever we're in New England, too. So I wonder if any reports will come out from that.
Texans at Saints will be our next game that we're going to pick. I'm going to go with the Saints. Obviously, when I talked about them winning the division, I'm very high on them. They're a very good team at home. Houston brought in half a new roster in the last week, so there's going to be some adjustment there. I'm going to go with the Saints.
Yeah, even though these were both playoff teams last year, I don't think they are as competitive against each other as one may think. I have the Saints as well. You can't go to the Mercedes-Benz Superdome and expect to come out with a win. Like you said, Houston brought in a lot of new players. It'll be hard for them to compete with an already established roster on the Saints. I'm going with New Orleans. Staying in football but moving to the college side of things, some exciting matchups this week, thank goodness, because last week's were not exciting at all. We're going to start with an ACC and SEC matchup. Texas A&M travels to Clemson to face off against the number one Tigers. Texas A&M is ranked number 12, but I said Clemson's going to go undefeated this season. They're going to be in the college football playoffs, so I obviously can't have them lose to Texas A&M in this game. Had it been at College Station, I probably would have picked them, but because it's in Clemson, I'm going to go with them.
College Station is a tough place to play, but that's not where we are, so I'm going to go with Clemson for the same reason. They're the best team in college football. I mean, they won the championship last year. They're ranked number one until that's proven otherwise. I have a lot of faith in Clemson. I'm going to go with Clemson. A top 10 matchup, number 6, LSU, travels to number 9, Texas. I'm going to go with LSU. That was a team that I predicted to be in the college football playoff. I need to see something from Texas. I know they're ranked in the top 10, but I need to see something impressive out of them before I'm willing to put a lot of stock into them, so I'm going to go with LSU.
Yeah, I think Texas is one of those teams to me, too. Like I said last week, they're kind of they're in the top 10, but they're not someone I expect to be in the top 10 at the end of the season. LSU, however, I think will be around number 6 pretty much for the entirety of the season. A win against Texas this week will maybe even boost them to 5th or 4th, so I will pick the Tigers in this one as well. I like the Tigers, I guess. I got them both these games so far. Staying in college football, moving over to the Pac-12, there is Stanford at USC. Might have been a competitive game had JT Daniels been playing for the Trojans, but seeing how he blew out his knee, I don't think it will be competitive at all. Stanford is a tough team. They have a stingy defense. They're ranked number 25th. I think they will rise throughout the season, and winning against the Trojans this week will help propel them forward.
Boy, these are some dull quick picks. I have the Stanford Cardinal as well. Same reason. USC losing their quarterback, that hurts. That was a team that I already don't think was quite as good as Stanford. Stanford's ranked 23rd in the country. They did beat Northwestern last week. Not a convincing win, but Northwestern is a decent football team.
They're a good enough team.
So I think I've seen enough out of Stanford to take them in that game. The one MLB series that we're going to pick, Indians at Twins, very critical in the division race. I'm going with the Twins. They're 9-1 in their last 10. They're hot. Cleveland is not so hot. They're not so great on the road, which is what they have to, where they have to go to take on the Twins. I'm going to go with the Minnesota Twins to establish some distance between them and the Indians.
We have a difference finally. I'm going with the Indians in this one. While I don't think the Indians will be able to defeat the Twins in the division, I think they understand that getting swept by the Rays is putting themselves in a difficult situation. Mike Clevenger will be pitching this weekend. He has been excellent for my fantasy team and for the Indians alike since he's came off the IL. The Twins are good, but I just think Indians have a lot more to play for right now, so I'm going with Cleveland. Either way we cut it, though, we're probably going to have a very similar record come this time next week, so hopefully this series is one that matters a lot.
Well, I don't pick very well when it comes to baseball, so that's not a good sign. On to bold predictions. We've got three apiece here. All of mine come from the NFL, so I'll start with a playoff prediction. I think that we're going to have five new teams in the NFL playoffs this year. I think the Steelers and Browns, as I had discussed, will be one. I think the Detroit Lions are going to get in at the 9-7 record. The Lions are my surprise team. I think the Lions will be okay. The 49ers I have in the playoffs as well. Jimmy Garoppolo's healthy. They were a team last year that statistically was very average, and their record did not reflect that. I think that they can be better this year now that they're healthy. And, of course, the Minnesota Vikings, who I may or may not be falsely very fond of.
Wow, the Niners.
The Niners and the Lions is the wild cards in the NFC.
Yeah, those are definitely some wild card picks. They might combine to get nine wins together. I don't know if either of them are going to reach them on their own. Very bold, though. I do like it. I'm going to have my first bold prediction come in the Major League Baseball. Last year, we saw two-game 163s. The AL wildcard race is tight enough this year that I think we're going to have a game 163 to decide who gets to be the second AL wildcard team for the play-in. So it'll be a play-in for a play-in. I don't know which of the three it'll be. It's too close for me to say, but I do think that there will be a tie right now. Like I said, the A's are tied with the Indians. Them, the Rays, Indians, all of them could be thrown together. Pick any two out of a hat. They could have the play-in game for the play-in game. I don't think any divisions this year, though. Just a wild card.
I like that. Staying in the NFL, Patrick Mahomes is a guy that a lot of people think a lot of, and I do too. I think he's a very good quarterback, but I think he's going to throw fewer than 40 touchdowns after he put up 50 last year.
39.
And under 4,500 yards.
400.
And also not win any major awards, as he was the MVP and the Offensive Player of the Year last year. I don't think he's going to have a bad season, but I think people are expecting 50 and 5,000 from him again and another MVP-type season. I don't think he's going to do that. Not if he throws 39 and 4,400 yards, I think people will be plenty happy, and that's a very good season, but I don't think he's going to hit the numbers that he hit last year.
It's so hard to reach the same numbers whenever you just set new records for yourself and all that, so I like it. Like you said, those two stats, the 39 and 4,400, wouldn't be bad, but it'll be tough to see him get 40 again. I'm going to move to college football for my second one. So the top six right now are Clemson, Alabama, Georgia, Oklahoma, Ohio State, and LSU. All those six teams, I don't think any of them are going to lose in September. I looked at all their schedules. They're all pretty easy. Some ranked opponents in that, but either way I cut it, I think come October, those will be the same six that you see right now.
I could see that. Final prediction from the NFL. It seems like the recent trend in the offseason has been finding a team that makes a couple moves and everybody falls in love with them.
Cleveland Browns.
This year it was the Cleveland Browns. Last year it was the 49ers until Garoppolo got hurt. Next year, I think it's going to be the Miami Dolphins. And the reason I think it's going to be the Dolphins is because, like I said, they have set themselves up for a successful rebuild. And if they execute, they have almost two times as many picks in this year's draft as they started with because of trades. I think, I don't know this for sure, don't quote me on this, but I believe I saw somewhere that they could have upwards of $100 million in free agency next year. If they use that money well and they pick good players that come around, even if they don't perform on the field, I think going into the season next year, they can execute this rebuild well enough that they will be the team that people will be excited about at this team at this time next year.
Miami has themselves in a spot where we have all this stuff. Now, what
can
do we
they
do with
use it? I think they'll do enough with it to create some buzz.
My last bold prediction will come in the NFL as well. It's not looking towards that much of a distant future. It's staying within week one. I think the max score that any team will put up this week is 45 points. I think the Buccaneers might put up 45 points. I picked them in our weekly pick'em to score the most. Maybe it's 42, maybe 44. I just don't think anybody will eclipse 45, so I will say that is the max. I do think one team will reach 45, not that like 41 will be the max, but nobody will get past 45.
I mean, yeah, I could definitely see that happening. All right, that's our time for tonight. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. We'll be back at the same time next week. Until then, good night, everybody.